Blog Talk Radio.
Tremendous show for you. You know, I usually jump into different aspects and genres of all aspects of life, and today is one of them. We have a tremendous actress and person in life and her walk on the show. But before we get her on there, I'd like to let everybody know that's listening on iHeart and Univision. The more downloads, the more the show plays in succession next week, so be sure to download this show as it's going to be a tremendous one. With that being said, I would like to welcome Karma McCain to the program. Karma, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Don. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's truly an honor. You know, we look at things that we do in life, and you know, sometimes we don't truly have an understanding. I got my master's in engineering science. I ended up a combat sports photographer and journalist. You know,
that's
life has this way of, you know, throwing us a curveball. What was life like for Karma McCain before she even considered acting? What was the attributes and aspects in your path?
Well, yeah, a lot of things led me here, for sure. I was kind of always in the background of it. I moved to L.A., and I was, you know, one of those people who was like, if it's meant to be, I'll just be discovered. You know, I was like, so I kind of had this attitude of, if it's meant to be, the universe will align and just, like, give it to me. And so I had worked in wardrobe styling for a while, and then I got pregnant actually shortly after I moved to Los Angeles. And my choice, having been a latchkey kid and not having – my mom was a single mom, and she worked. So having been a latchkey kid and coming home to an empty home, I just knew when I had kids I wanted to be as present as I could and be a stay-at-home mom. So my choice was to raise my son. And so when my son was, you know, about a year old, I again kind of got back into the industry and did makeup. I was a makeup artist part-time just to kind of get out of the house and have a little bit of creativity. But it wasn't until he was 13 and I kind of realized he's about to start high school and he's going to be college and, like, what – am I allowed to cuss on this show? Because I cuss
a lot. Yeah, you can say anything you want.
I was like, you know, what the fuck am I going to do with myself? I'm still relatively young. And I was like, you know, I moved to L.A. I've always wanted to act. And fuck waiting for the universe to bring it to me. I'm going to go out and get it. So I started acting 5 years ago, and I haven't really looked back. It's brought phenomenal shifts in my life. It's opened me up in a lot of ways, and that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and it's actually tremendous because you look at some of your latest projects, you know, Now the Discussion and Blood Relatives, Backstabber, you got multiple TV commercials out there. What was the thought in your heart when you just, you know, you said, like earlier, and I generally don't cuss on my show, but my guests can. But
okay.
Earlier you said,
I'll
you
try
said
not
fuck
to.
That. No, you're good. I mean, I'm just different in that aspect. You know, but sometimes we look over our shoulder and you know, you talked about being a latchkey kid. We look over our shoulder and we ultimately come up with that defined path. What was it in your heart that made you choose acting and had you go in this avenue in life? Because you look at your resume, it's very vast. You're multi-talented, you're multifaceted.
Thank you. What was it
that had you choose acting as your main goal and intent?
Well, I think, like I said, there's this fabulous book called The Artist's Way, and I read this book years ago before I even decided to act. And in the book, it talks about people who are shadow artists. And these are people who really have a dream, something they want to do, but they don't feel worthy enough or feel that they're talented enough or whatever it may be to really go for that dream. So they tend to work in the background, in the shadows, hence shadow artists. So I consider myself a shadow artist. You know, I feel like I had a lot of pride and ego that, ironically, it's an insecurity, like this pride and ego that I can't be an actor. That's so cliche. But at the same time, it was a cover up of not being good enough, feeling that maybe I'm not worthy enough for this. And so I worked, you know, like I said, in the background, I was a wardrobe stylist briefly and a makeup artist. So it was my way of kind of being in the industry and around it, but without truly admitting that I actually wanted to be the one in front of the camera, not the one getting the person ready to be in front of the camera. And so, yeah, like I said, I think it really hit me when my son was, you know, 13, and I just kind of had this epiphany, like, girl, there's no reason you can't go for it. Anybody can go for it. It's just a matter of making the choice and committing to it and doing it. And I just bit the bullet and said, get over it. Get over your ego and this pride of and fear of failure and just start. And, you know, this business is not an easy business. It's one that requires a lot of faith. And it also requires a lot of persistence and a lot of rejection. It requires perseverance, just really. And this, I think, applies to pretty much anything in life. It's just don't give up. Literally, if you don't know what the next step is, and often I don't, I just know if I keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep going, it's going to lead to the next thing. And so that's been my experience thus far.
I like that because this sounds like my life in a nutshell. I mean,
yeah,
you really look at it. I'm a photographer and I'm a radio show host. I've always been the one that wants to be a part of the promotion, but I don't want to be in the limelight. You know, I work from the shadows. I make others shine. And I'm perfectly content there, you know, and it's amazing that you were able to overcome that aspect because I still can't handle it. I've been inducted in the Hall of Fame. I still don't think I believe there. This last year,
awesome.
I got talk show of the year. I don't see how, you know, and it, you know, you sit there and you look in the mirror and you get that reflection of yourself and
yeah.
You try to get a greater understanding of what life is. But you've been able to overcome that. You know, I didn't realize that your world and my world are so correlated, you know, in such a way. I had Dan the Beast Severn on my show, who was a tremendous world champion, Hall of Famer, but also was one of the stars in Rudy. Then I had another fighter on the other night who was played a major role in Raging Bull. So, you know, for those of, you know, my listeners that are going, you know, why is Don interviewing an actress? But the worlds are so closely correlated, most people don't truly realize it because, you know, entertainment is entertainment. But you've been able
to
rise above. You've been able to rise above, and you've done a lot of things in your life. What does it mean for Carmen McCain to be on set? You know, because you look at it in a fighter aspect, you know, each and every time they walk out, once they hear the music playing, it's a different aspect. Would you say it's a different aspect for you each and every time you step on set?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because every time it's a different crew, it's a different set of people. Generally, I mean, I have worked with some of the same people, but yeah, I mean, being on set, it's my natural high, you know, it feeds me. It gives me that drive and that feeling of being fulfilled in a way, like it being creative and expressing, being able to be creative and express myself through acting is something that is extremely fulfilling. And it's a form of creation, you know? And I don't want to skip over what you said about, your accolades and the things you've accomplished and how you're still surprised that you've managed to receive this acknowledgement and you don't quite see it yourself. And I just had this conversation with another friend of mine who we were talking about this. You know, it's so easy for us to give compliments to other people and to tell other people how good they are. But when we're given a compliment or when we're giving something, we have a tendency in general to either negate it and be like, oh, you know, it wasn't that good, or not be able to take it in. And one of the things that I'm learning is just if someone's giving us a compliment, A, it's a gift from them, and for us to receive it is giving them a gift back. And, you know, self-worth is something I think a lot of people struggle with, and it's a very valid thing to recognize ourselves and to accept that why can't we be just as good at something as that person, you know? So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I think self-love is an important thing, and not in an egotistical or, you know, I'm better than everybody else way, just in a way of honoring ourselves for who we are and the gifts that we have. And it's okay to honor those things within ourselves. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that's an important cause for me, especially right now with body diversity and just, you know, being able to accept ourselves however we may be, which is a challenge. A challenging
truly
thing,
is.
But yeah.
You know, I want to jump in real quick, and I'm sorry for cutting you off. You know, because I just want to touch one more on that, and then we'll move on. You know, my sponsors and people that back the show, back me in life, you know, they're always on me, man. Accept the credit. You know, if people see you that way, you have to learn to allow it. And I think I'm slowly, after 23 years in the business, I think I'm slowly allowing to accept, you know, what I have done in certain aspects of all the genres that I do. You know, I do want to ask you a question, because I like to get these answers from people, because it shows the listeners, it shows the world who they truly are. If you had to say, I'm going to give you three words, and if you had to describe them to me, what would they be? And the three words are pride, passion, and perseverance. What do those mean to Carmen McCain?
Wow. Well, pride, I feel like pride is a very fine line of, you know, there's one thing to be proud of who we are as a whole and honoring where we've come from, our heritage, our culture, our life, our own personal path. But I feel like pride can be a very fine line between ego, and being proud can also be a thing that can be detrimental. So I feel like pride is there's a fine line between finding a good balance of honoring ourselves, but not taking it to a place where it's detrimental. And, you know, I'm not sure if I have a good analogy for that, but I does that kind of make sense? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Passion, oh my God. Passion is like the life force, man. Like, passion is where it's at. Anything that's inspiring, like, man, I am so passionate about so many things. It could be like looking up and seeing a full moon, and I'm like passionate about that. It could be seeing a great performance, whether it's a musician or an actor, or even, you know, last night I was out dancing, and there was this guy on the dance floor with his drumming, and I was like, you know, that brought passion. I feel like if people are passionate and have something to be passionate about, there'd be a lot more love on this planet. I didn't really ever think about it that way until just this moment. But I think passion is a great driving force. And perseverance is something that drives us pursue that passion. You know, passions, if we have a passion, I guess I can only speak for myself, you know, my passion is to give the gift of acting. It doesn't necessarily mean I have to be rich and famous. It means inspiring someone else the way I've been inspired. And so that requires perseverance. Most people, you know, aren't famous overnight. Some people do. They do one film and boom, they're huge. Most actors, it takes a good 10 to 20 years. And I think that's for a reason. I think it's the drive and the perseverance to really want to find your voice and your craft and dig deep to be able to find these gifts to hopefully share with people. And perseverance is something that sometimes doesn't come easy. Sometimes it's you know, one of those things where I haven't booked a job in a month and I'm like, shit, should I be doing something else? Like, you know, there are moments when it's like of questioning and am I doing the right thing? Is this the right choice? But, you know, that's where perseverance really, really that one foot in front of the other and just keep going.
Like that. I truly do, because if you look at your life and you really don't have to know you personally to get the great intent from your life. I mean, just so far in the interview so far, you know, you talk about your child and your life growing up, and that was truly the beginning of the first chapter of your story. Mm-hmm. And then you step into acting and you know, you created another paragraph or another aspect to that chapter. But then there's a third aspect that, you know, I'm an amputee from the knee down. You know, I have diabetes
right.
And I had to learn to accept looking at myself different. I had to, you know, realize that I wasn't different. I had to realize that who I am is really in my heart, not my shell. And you did that with the body diversity, as being a body diversity advocate. Now, you're one that I'm probably going to butcher this, and I'm sorry if I do. You suffer from body dysmorphic disorder. What does that entail in the clinical aspect?
So for me, I was never technically diagnosed with body dysmorphic disorder because when I was growing up, this wasn't a term. It was only something I actually heard in the last like 5 years or so. So when I was growing up, I didn't know I even had a problem. I literally just thought, so my body dysmorphic order for me personally is that I have transparent skin. I'm extremely veiny. My chest is veiny. My boobs are veiny. My veins stick out on my arms. I just have see-through skin basically. And I'm extremely veiny. And as a kid, you know, as a teenager was really when I became aware of it. And I grew up, I was always into fashion and reading fashion magazines and models. And I never saw anyone like me pictured in magazines. And so I literally thought I was just a freak of nature. I was like, something is wrong with me. I'm just a complete freak. Like, I felt like an alien. And so I just hid. I covered up. A lot of body dysmorphic disorder people have eating disorders. They tend to fall into like anorexia or bulimia. But they're all different. You know, everybody has their own thing. So for me, I always covered up. Like, I never wore a shirt below the collarbone until I was in my 20s. And I had met with this woman. She was, I guess, sort of like a healer of sorts. And she was veiny. And she had on this shirt and her veins were popping out. And I was like, oh, my God. And I asked her about it. I said, hey, you know, I'm like you. I'm veiny. But I said, how do you show it? And like, I can't stand it. And she was like, it's normal. It was very normal for her. And she said, I grew up. I had a lot of brothers and they would tease me about it, but it was never something that bothered me. I always owned it. And she said, you need to go talk to somebody. You have body image issues. And I thought she was nuts. I was like, this is the first time someone told me that I had a problem psychologically with the way I looked at my body. And ever since then, you know, she told me to seek professional help and I didn't. I mean, just knowing my own personality, I know if I choose something and I go for it, I can make it happen. So I just made the choice that day to start loving myself. And this was a long time ago. This is not like a sudden process where all of a sudden I just accept my body. This has been years and years in the making of slowly, step by step, just finding ways to slowly accept myself. I think, you know, probably if I had gotten professional help, it might have gone quicker, but my path that I chose was to do it on my own. So that's it. That's kind of the overview of my body dysmorphic disorder. I don't really suffer from it anymore. I still have, you know, I'm getting older now, so I'm starting to have saggy skin, and like there's people, you know, the whole aging thing is a whole new aspect. So I still am critical of myself. It's not that I wake up every day and I'm like, my body, I love it all the time. I still work on it. It's a daily practice, you know, just like being positive versus negative. It's like, it's just a daily practice of choosing to change the voice in my head from "you're ugly" to "you know what, you're beautiful and I love you just the way you are." Yeah.
You know, would you say it was in your mind, would you say it was a kind of a double-edged sword or even a slight hindrance when you decided to go into acting, having this aspect of thought in your head? Or did it just, how did you overcome that aspect, Karma?
Well, I mean, when I started acting 5 years ago, I had not overcome my BDD, really. I had worked through quite a bit of it, but I will say, you know, I am Greek and I'm Irish, so I can get very tan and I can get very pale. And when I'm very pale, my skin is more see-through, right? Being tan, it's sort of like a natural cover-up. So I've spent most of my life in tanning beds to be tan to cover up my veins. And so it's funny that you ask that, because whenever I would book something that I had to be exposed, I would go get a spray tan. Spray tans are like makeup for your entire body. And literally that's how I would cope with it. The only way that I could cope when I first started acting was if I knew I was going to be wearing a dress that showed my chest and my legs, I would go get a spray tan. I would plan it all out. And then the first thing I do on set is tell the makeup artist, just so you know, I have all these veins on my legs. You're going to probably have to cover them up with makeup. And, you know, it's always just make sure you cover it up before I'm on set, you know, still very insecure about it. And now I don't give a rat's ass. I don't give, you know, I don't, but that's only more recently within like the last, I guess, year or so. But yeah, it was still an issue. And I was worried about that. I was like, what if people don't book me? What if I go in for the audition and they see my veiny arms and I'm like, oh, we can't book her. Like it was on my mind for sure.
Yeah. For sure. It has to perplex you in some aspect, you know, but I want to take you to the good side of it because, you know, a lot of people make career changes, choices, you know, they decide they want to change the path. You did that. So I commend you on that. But take
Thank
me
you.
Back to the very first time that you went and you were going to give this your all and you actually got your first job. What did it truly mean to Karma McCain, knowing that not only in your heart did you, you know, had the perseverance to do this, but you finally overcame that obstacle and got your first job? What did that truly mean to you?
I think looking back, I would say I was just so excited but nervous at the same time because it was my first job. But I feel like, yeah, you know, there is something about feeling validated with booking a job, which can be tricky too. There's this great interview with Sarah Paulson, who's a, you know, very famous actress, and she didn't make it. She's one of those people who didn't really become famous until a few years ago. And she said, you know, I auditioned for things and the casting director would tell me, you were the best actor for this part, but we have to go another direction. And it's very important, I think, for this point for me to say that our talent actually doesn't decide if we get a role or not. There's so many other factors that come into play. So even though I do get a sense of validation when I book a role, and it does make me, you know, it does give me the validation of, oh, I'm on the right path. It's also very important to me to not get caught up in being booked and feeling like, oh, now I'm okay. You know, it's, I don't know if I can really describe it because, for, you know, being an other actors would understand. I'm not sure if it would relate to someone who's not an actor to just not get caught up in the, still be humble, I guess, to maintain a level of just keeping it real. So, yes, when I had that first booking, it was like I finally got it. I finally booked my first job. But really and truly, then it's on to the next. It's like, okay, what's next?
Right. You know, one aspect of your career that has me, you know, dying in laughter is you post your blooper reels and things of this. And,
yeah.
You know, what? Oh, I got to say, I was dying.
Yeah.
What aspect of you finally decided to show, you know, the 360 of you, the comical aspect, the comical side of you to your fans, the people who watch you on the screen? What was it that made you realize that this was a certain part of you that you needed to be, you know, you needed to portray?
I studied comedy for over 3 years, comedy and improv, and not like stand-up comedy, like how to read comedy, how to read TV comedy specifically. Comedy is, I love comedy. It's my jam. I thoroughly enjoy it. And I still, you know, improv, doing like improv classes as much as possible and improvising. So for me, when I was doing my self-tapes, and just the natural frustration that can come from messing up the lines over and over, or, you know, forgetting them or whatever it is, I just realized like and I talk to myself a lot. Like I'm constantly talking to myself. So I'm basically doing that in my self-tapes. I'd just be commenting on myself while I was going and watching it back. I was like, almost like an alter ego. I was like, this girl, I was cracking myself up. I was watching it. I was like, this girl is hilarious. See, when I see my work, even my photographs, you know, when I look at my photographs, I don't see karma. I look at my work very objectively. I just see it. I don't see it as me. I see it as someone else. And so, you know, that's why one of the things that actually helped me get through the body dysmorphic disorder, because I was looking at these photographs or watching tapes and I'm like, this girl's funny. Or this picture is beautiful. And so, you know, I was like, oh, wait, that's me. Oh. And so sort of this light bulb. But, yeah, the comedy, like, I crack myself up. I don't mean that in a pompous way. I mean, I just watch it, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, she is too much. So I just started editing them together, like taking these little clips and editing them together. And, yeah, people really enjoy them because they are just – silly and ridiculous and funny to watch. But it's also the, you know, it's the irony of it too is the criticism where I am literally criticizing myself, right? So it's like to see that too is interesting. I mean, I don't take it too heavy because I tend to keep it light. Like even though I'm criticizing myself, I let it go. I don't hold on to it. But yeah.
Well, it's crazy because you go from, you know, and it's funny, I didn't realize this till today, you know, the Ring the Doorbell commercial, you know, one of the highest rated, you know, commercials on TV still to date, you know, you go and look at these little facts and it's funny, you go from the Ring the Doorbell commercial to being with Lifetime, you know, Sundance, Investigation Discovery, all these different aspects of your career. When you get that brief moment and you look in the mirror and you see Karma McCain and you see the accomplishments that continue to come your way, what do you truly take away from that reflection at that moment?
I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying about your own personal accolades. You know, I feel like I still have so far to go, and I don't mean that in a negative connotation. I just feel like I don't really look at my stuff as successes. I do, but I don't. So I'm glad that you're saying this to me because it's giving me an opportunity to pause and say, oh yeah, you have done all these things. So accept that. So thank you. I'm going to take that moment to just say, you know what? Yeah, you have done all these things, and that's good. And so when I look at myself in the mirror, I tend to just, I really am like, what's next? What's next? And what do I have to do to get there?
You know, it's a hard situation because, you know, we are generally on the same plane, so I understand where you're coming from. What would be the ultimate aspect or the ultimate admiration for Karma McCain to have transpire in your life? What would you feel that would truly have you say you made it?
Oh, wow. I feel, you know, like what I had said earlier about inspiring. If I can inspire people through my art and my creation, whichever form that may be, whether it's the body dysmorphic disorder or acting or my writing, my bloopers, you know, I've been inspired by so many artists and art in general that's the gift that I want to give back. That's to me, if I can give that back and help someone, inspire someone else, then I feel like then I would have succeeded, have made it.
Yeah, to give without expectation. That's a tremendous attribute. You know, I don't really research a whole lot. I don't write down any questions during my show, and most people that have been on my show realize this. It comes from the heart. But there was one particular picture that caught my attention, and not very many people would even have the opportunity to be in the same room with this gentleman. But you had an opportunity to take a picture with Ed Asner. And what was it like to be around a true legend, and what did you take away from that moment?
Well, I actually got to interview him. That was for the Hollywood Film Festival, which I am a live host for. So I got to interview him on the red carpet. And I have to tell you, like, it was fucking fantastic. I mean, that man is just phenomenal. Like, he's given back. He does so much foundation work, and he gives back so much. And just his career and it was truly one of the best moments of my life. And not only that, he gave me a kiss on the mouth, like a full on, like, kiss me on the lips. And I was like, I can, okay, that's it. I'm good. it was phenomenal. Yeah. To be around that kind of energy. And he's so humble and so down to earth and still going. He's like, I don't know, 84, 85, 80 something, right? And he's just still kicking ass. So very, very inspiring. It was such an honor to be able to meet him and interview him. It really was.
Yeah, you know, I feel the same way sometimes. Like Monday, I got Chuck Liddell coming on. I'm sure you probably don't know who he is, but
I don't. I'm sorry.
He's one of the greatest of all time to ever step into an octagon. You know, so I don't get fanboyed
awesome.
In the sport, but I do have people that I admire and look up to, you know, just like you do, Ed Asner. You know, when we look at life and we go through all those ups and downs, like we talked about earlier, you know, adversity, and we overcome it and things like that, how does it feel for Karma McCain knowing that not only did you start a legacy, but you're continuing the legacy for your child, you know, for future generations, you know, of his family, of your family, to go back and look and realize how much of a difference you made in life? What does that moment mean to you?
I feel like I'm pursuing that moment as we speak. I feel like that, you know, my life path has led to this. And I feel like I'm currently pursuing that goal of, you know, really to be a voice for change of how we perceive ourselves and how society perceives what's beautiful. And so, yeah, it's such a tricky thing because, I mean, maybe it's not a tricky thing. Maybe it's not tricky at all. All I know is that in my heart, like, I'm very passionate about helping to further that in whatever way I can.
I mean, let's just put it like it really is. You've embedded a footstep in time in this life for not just your family, but for others, to, you know, down the road to look back, and you're basically immortalizing yourself, and that's a tremendous attribute to who you are. Not very many people do that, and, you know, I commend you for that. I'm going to ask you an off-topic question. If you were to have to write down a statement to be put in a time capsule for future generations to open up and get an idea of who Carmen McCain was, what would that statement say?
Oh, wow. Wow.
I told you I'm Barbara Walters.
I know, right? That's a deep-ass question. And I have to improvise on the fly. All right, here we go. What would it be? It would be Carmen McCain is a complex, passionate soul who who's a humanitarian and really believes that everyone on this planet deserves the same basic human rights. I'm very, very passionate about human rights, and I really believe that everybody on this planet all deserves basic human rights.
I like that, because one of my main pet peeves, I have a show that I do on Wednesday, a weekly talk show, and one of my pet peeves is, you know, what you see on the news, what you see, you know, transpired through the press and things like this.
Yeah.
And I recently was out in California, and I saw a horrific aspect of life that we as Americans, we don't talk about, we don't put on the news, because we want everybody to think we're this tremendous country. But I'm rolling in Merced, California, and on the side of a freeway in this concrete jungle.
Yeah.
And for as far as eyes can see, all you can see is tents.
Yeah.
And I see this little boy playing with a spare tire that was just on the side of the road, and the little boy was just as dirty as can be. And it truly broke my heart that here we're supposed to live in one of the greatest countries in the world.
Yeah.
But yet what I'm watching right in front of me is telling me different. Why is it that you feel that America is so inept to sharing our atrocities, but we're quick-witted to help other countries that are in, you know, better off situations than us?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's so many devastating aspects worldwide, not just here, worldwide. But yes, you know, the homeless population in Los Angeles is also, it's out of control right now, and there's tent cities everywhere. There's homeless people everywhere. And I've lived here for 19 years. I've never seen it as bad as it is. And I really feel like, and a lot of people will disagree with me on this, I really, of course, I believe in capitalism and, like, having your business and working it. But what I feel like is happening is corporations are taking over our country, and they're making legislation, they're writing laws, and they're getting things passed that are in their favor. And, you know, you can't have the same basic wage that you had in 1996. You know, like, inflation, the price of everything increases, owning a home, owning a car, all these things, but yet job wages have not increased as significantly as the CEOs and the people who run these corporations. It's so far off the mark that to me it's so basic, it's so obvious. So, you know, I don't really get into politics too much. I just know what I feel in my heart, and my heart is like, there's no reason a CEO needs to make $50 million a year and a worker making, let's say, 45.
Yeah.
You know, you can't sustain the American dream that way. And we can already see how it's crumbling just by the homeless population, you know? And so I feel like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't have the answers. I don't pretend to know, but I do feel like that it's not going to be an easy solve. And why we go and help other countries when we should be helping ourselves? Again, I don't have the answer to that, but I feel like we definitely need to be working on our own.
Yeah, I appreciate your response, you know, and I agree with you. You know, you've done a lot in your career. There's a tremendous amount of time left in the future and the ability of Karma McCain. What would you like to see transpire for you in the next couple of months? What would make you feel that you truly have reached that aspect that you've been driving for?
In the next couple months?
No, just in the future.
Oh. In the future, I would love to work, you know, on a great TV show with a great group of people, a great crew, and I would love to have the opportunity to have to be on a show. And a great show with great people. I love dark comedy. So I love, you know, shows that are funny, but it still have heart. So that's really, you know, but as an actor, we don't really get to choose where we go. It kind of happens. But if I could choose, that's what I would choose. And then also, again, with the body diversity, I think just being able to, you know, I suffered for a long time, most of my life. I would love to go and speak to girls, high school teenagers, because you know the thing is with body dysmorphic disorder is that most people don't go around saying, they're not sharing that they have it. It's a hidden, it's a secret, it's a very secretive, you know, and you, it's not something you see, and most people aren't, like, they're not talking about it, they're not, because they're so afraid of it and insecure that they just hide, and so there's no real way to know who these people are, because they're not coming out, you know, and unless someone has an eating disorder and their parents can really see physically that something's going on, you generally don't know. So that's also, it's a tricky way to get in, but I would love to just be able to go around and speak to women and girls and men too. Like I said, I get a lot of men who write to me with their own body dysmorphic issues, which I wasn't aware of. So that's been very enlightening as well. So it's not just women and girls. It's boys too, really.
That's tremendous because, you know, a lot of people don't have the aspect in thought that you do or in heart that you do in life that, you know, for you it could have been a downside to your career, but yet you still chose to make it public. You choose to share it. You choose to speak out for it. You know, being a body diversity advocate, what would you like, you know, you kind of already explained a little bit, but in the future, what would you like to be able to do more of? Or do you already have an established foundation where people can reach out to you, or is it just via social media right now?
Right now, it's mostly via social media. I mean, I do have a manager, you know, that if someone wanted to, you know, whatever, book me for something, they could go through my manager. But right now it's just through social media. So I'm not really sure how that is going to expand. Again, I just put one foot in front of the other, and I'm very instinctive. I just go off of my instincts of what feels right, what feels like it's the next step. And so, I'm not sure how that platform, what the next platform would be for that. But I feel like in today's, you know, there's a lot of options and there's a lot of ways to go. I'm not sure what it is, though.
I get you there. You know, I'm going to ask you three questions and then give me your thoughts. There are three different programs. One is My Crazy Sex. What is your take on that?
My Crazy Sex is a fun show. It's you're talking about the TV show, right? The one that I did?
Yes.
Yeah, that was fun because it's a fun, there are stories, you know, about crazy sex stories, you know, that have happened. And so that was a lot of fun just because you know, I'm pretty open-minded, and I think, I don't know, I'm sure, you know, from having seen my stuff, you can tell I'm not too shy about, you know, those sort of things. So I thought it was a lot of fun. It was a fun project to do.
I Married a Murderer.
I have a little bit of a bitterness with that because that company hasn't paid me for that work. So that's a little bit like they went under, I don't know. It's a whole story. It's a big, huge thing in the business. But anyways, yeah, that one, we'll skip over that. Next.
Now the discussion
was one of my all-time favorite jobs. Number one, the show, it's an after show, you know, kind of like The Talking Dead. The Talking Dead, I guess, kind of started these after shows, right? After Walking Dead, they would have hosts come on and talk about the episode. So Now the Discussion is exactly that. And the show that I worked on is called This Close, and it's written by two deaf people. They're best friends in real life, and they're the leads of the show. And it was such a phenomenal opportunity because, again, going back to the body diversity and just accepting and getting more diversity on TV, right? This is the first show that had two deaf leads, and it was like such an awesome, awesome opportunity. In fact, it's on my bucket list now to learn American Sign Language. I really want to learn ASL. It was just so phenomenal to be part of that. It really was. And they've actually now, it's the season got bumped up to Sundance Channel. It's actually, I think, starting next week. And then they got renewed for a season two. All very, very exciting. I'm very happy for them and glad that this stuff is showing up on our, you know, TVs to share with people. And a lot of people aren't exposed to deaf people or disabled people. And so I think exposure to things that we're not used to is what helps to breed acceptance.
Yeah. You know, I totally understand that aspect because, you know, then again, you know, we kind of cross-correlate because I'm in the sports world also. You know, you look at jiu-jitsu and primarily there's no organization in the United States, and I prefer, because I'm an amputee, I prefer the term handicapable. You know, there was no organization that would allow a handicapable person to face another handicapable person in their own division. You know, they basically had to fight able-bodied fighters. So a year ago, I took on the fight to change the rules of the way the sport was written. And about 3 months ago, I was able to do so under Professor J.W. Wright and Fuji Sports. And I'll forever be grateful to
him. That's awesome.
He's a tremendous man in life. Well, it just goes to show what you're doing. And that's the reason I brought it up, is because we can't bitch. We can't whine if we're not willing to stand up for something that we believe in. And if we're not willing to try and create change, then we have no voice at all. And that's what I think about life, and that's why I'm honored that you came on the show, because I see that attribute in you. You're a person that is wanting change, you see change, and you're willing to do what it takes to create change.
Thank you.
That's something a lot of people don't. Yeah, even if they do have it instilled, they don't share it. What did it mean for you to be a part of Sundance? What does it mean for you to get all these little different aspects added to your life, you know, and then you sit back and you realize, like we talked about earlier, you know, you said you would accept the accolades, but you're truly just getting started. Your name is starting to grow. You're truly just becoming a reckoning force in what you do. You know, how surreal is that to you?
Yeah. I guess it, you know, for me, it is kind of surreal, and I don't know if it's a combination of all of it, the acting and the writing and the body diversity, if it's just a culmination where it does all kind of feel surreal. I just totally lost my train of thought. What was your question again?
Uh, how everything, you know, became so surreal. Does it feel surreal to you being having all of these little accolades correlate together? You know, how surreal is it to you moving forward?
Right. Yeah, it is. It is surreal. And I think, too, maybe because the body, the BDD, was such a huge aspect. That was more of a challenge for me than starting to act. So I think, you know, coming out with BDD, my BDD, and talking about that on social media, that's been the most surreal in a way, because it was so close. I kept it so close to my heart for so long, and I suffered for so long. So that's been really, really huge and freeing. I think as an actor, we have to be open and available to our emotions and our feelings. And so if anything, that's been the most surreal, is like taking my power back from myself, really, with this BDD, but like releasing it and giving it to the public in a way set me free. And so that's been very surreal, but fabulous at the same time, and also more free on set.
Yeah. I like that, because I'm learning that aspect of life myself, you know, as we talked about earlier. You know, I'm learning, well, because I got sponsors. They pay for my shows a year in advance, which most people don't even get that opportunity to have people pay the bills a year in advance.
And, yeah, that's awesome.
You know, I had a buddy tell me, "Hey man, you're letting down your sponsors." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, you don't take pictures, and if you do, you never smile. When you do this, you do it half-heartedly. You never, you know." They said, "You're a representation of the organizations that back you."
Mm.
And I never really thought about it that way. And yeah. I sat down that day and I thought about it, and I realized that, you know, I wasn't doing the people that paid the bills, you know, justice. I wasn't giving their brand justification. So I'm like you. I had to kind of rethink things and correlate my life down a different path. And I'm learning to accept what the world thinks of me, you know. And it's not an easy thing to do. A lot of people would love to be in our shoes, but once you're there, It's truly a whole different atmosphere than what you truly think. You know, people always say, "I want to be famous, I want to be famous." But the work that it takes to get there and stay there is truly profound. It takes a lot out of you. What gives Karma McCain the strength to continue on? Because, you know, let's face it, both businesses that we're in are truly brutal, you know. And it takes a lot out of you. It's physically draining. How do you find the strength and the encouragement and the self-belief to continue on?
Well, you know, like you said, this business, it comes with its pros and cons. And it comes with, you know, criticisms as well as compliments. And I just know there's nobody in this world that can be as hard on me as I've already been on myself. And knowing that for sure gives me the strength and power to go on, because, you know, I haven't really reached a level acting-wise where, you know, a movie or a show I've been in has a critic review, you know. And so, yeah, I think, you know, there are these people that have to deal with this really on a daily basis. I mean, you know, with my social media, I do get 99% positive feedback. I've only had like a couple, you know, negative experiences, but even that, I was like, dude, you can't even touch me, because I've already beat myself to the frickin' moon and back. So, like, you know, but that's not to say that I would condone someone trolling, or, you know, the whole body shaming and trolling that happens out there is just, I'm sure that can be pretty daunting and overwhelming for an actor who's very famous and successful. I think it's just, you know, knowing who we are at the end of the day, knowing our truth and sticking to that as much as possible and not letting outside circumstances sort of dictate how we feel about ourselves.
Good or bad,
because, you know, it can go to your head, too. If you start getting a bunch of accolades, it's like that can start to go to someone's head as well. So it's just, again, maintaining a truth and a balance either way.
I like that because I truly see it all the time. I bring these young fighters on as amateurs, and I'm on my fifth generation of fighters, and then you see some of them become world champions. And
yeah.
They act like they don't even remember who you are when you're physically the person that gave them their first opportunity. And I
yeah.
realized a long time ago that that's just life, you know, suck it up, buttercup, you know, that's the way things go. You know, I got a couple more questions for you and then I'll let
yeah.
you go, Carmen. It's been a tremendous
sure.
interview.
Thank
After
you.
It's all said and done, you know, what would Carmen McCain most like, what would you most like to be remembered for?
What would I most like to be remembered for? I would have to say, you know, being an artist, I think for sure is an important thing to me. I would have to say though, I think surpassing that would be just human right, like human rights, whether it even has something to do with the body stuff and helping to create a normalcy around different types of bodies, or even just, I mean, gosh, that's such a big question for me because I see, like I said, I'm at heart, I'm a humanitarian. I'm all about, we're all on this planet together. We're all striving, you know, for the same thing in a sense, which is food, love, and water, I guess, like our basic needs. And there's so many people who don't have that. And it's such a huge, huge thing that I would have no idea how I could even impact it. But I would love to be remembered for somehow doing something towards that. Yeah. And I don't know what the answer is. One foot in front of the other. And I hope it leads to that.
Mine is I would like to be able to create an avenue for acceptance, you know, for people to feel that they're accepted in life. And
yeah.
That's hard.
All, yeah.
I mean, it's this huge pill to swallow, but
it is.
I mean, I was always taught to give in life without expectation, to make others shine, you know.
Yeah.
The one thing that pisses me off is these people that will help an old lady up off the street, and the first thing they do is jump on social media to brag about it. You know, to me, things like that should be relished in the heart, not on a post. I think it takes away from the true reality and compassion of what the purpose and intent was to begin with. You know, Karma, in life I like to give people an opportunity on my show to thank those that pushed us, gave us the intent, the people that not the people that stood in front of us, not the people that stood behind us, but the people that stood side by side with us and helped us through every step of the way and helped mold us into who we are. You know, so I'm going to pass the microphone over to you. If there's anybody in your life that you would truly just like to say thank you to, the floor is yours, my friend.
Wow, you know, that's such a big, big thing because we're literally, you know, every person in my life has led to this moment. There's not one person that hasn't contributed to me being where I am today. There are definitely three women in my life I have three women that are like my best friends, and I feel very fortunate to have three, you know. So my best friend Desiree, Ilona, and Renee, these women have they've always been there for me no matter what. And I think to have these core women in my life has been very profound because, you know, we need support from each other, male or female, but just to have three strong, badass women in my life who I know no matter what time of day, I can call any of them up and they will all be there for me. I feel very grateful for that. And of course, my son changed my life. I mean, you know, kids do that. They come in and it got me out of my head in a way of myself and gave me this other being that I now had to, you know, take care of. And the thing I love about my son, I mean, of course, not just the fact that he's my son, but he is so different from me, you know, like, it's so funny how our kids come in, like, he's taught me so many lessons and his viewpoint on life is literally pretty much the opposite of mine. And I just love it because I'm like, but he's very passionate too about what he believes and what he thinks. And I'm open to that and I love it. And it's great to see someone who's not been affected by his own parents. Like, he doesn't just do what I do because I'm his mom and that's the way I think. He's really got his own mind and in his own way of thinking, which is, like I said, it's completely opposite of mine. So it's been really just great to experience that firsthand, you know.
It truly is. It truly is. My son is 32 years old, so I truly understand that aspect. But, you know, I'm truly honored that you came on the show. I'm glad we were able to make this happen.
Me too.
You know, I get to see a different insight into who you are and what the future is going to bring to you. I hope you get tremendous opportunities going forward. You know,
Thank you so much. It's
truly been an honor. I'm going to hand the mic to you one more time. Let my listeners and your fans know where they can find you on social media, if there's any other shout-outs you'd like to give or just anything else you'd like to add to the program before I let you go. The floor is yours, my friend.
Thank you. I just want to take this moment to really say thank you. I really, really am super grateful for you giving me the opportunity to come on your show to answer these questions. I'm really flattered. It's been fantastic. Thank you for your awesome questions. And I can be found on Instagram at Carba McCain, my first and last name. And I also have an acting page on Facebook, which is also the same, Karma McCain. And I'm on Twitter at Karma McCain. I don't use it. I'm not as active on it, but I am on there, which is, it's mostly my posts from Instagram. But Instagram is where, it's where I live. That's my fave. That's my number one form of social media. That's where you can find me. Reach out.
Most definitely. You know,
yeah.
It's been a tremendous opportunity you gave my show and my listeners today. You know, I wish you the best of luck in the future. Thank you so much for blessing my show. And
right back.
Next time you get something big, hit me and we'll have you back on. And
fantastic.
We'll share
I
you
love
again
it.
With the world. All right,
thank
on that
you
note,
again. I appreciate it.
Thank you and God bless you.
Likewise.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Karma McCain, actress, body diversity advocate, and a tremendous voice of Sundance Now. Truly a different aspect of an interview than I thought I would get. More humble, you know, great integrity through her words and very wise, you know. Overcoming obstacles in life is a hard aspect, and she seems to have been able to do that and create goals and follow through with those goals in life and become a tremendous attribute, not only to TV but to the big screen. With that being said, I'm truly humbled. I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch-Duran, and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers.net, an organization that believes nobody should be 86th in life, the United Way Merced, and last but not least, BiteMeMouthGuards.com with Joe Rice. You know, I do these multifaceted shows because I'm not just a sports show. I'm a multi-talented journalist that believes that everyone has a voice as long as you step out of the norm. Thank you for joining the show today. On that note, I think I'm going to take us out with a little bit of music. And to each and every one of you, have a tremendous day. Good day. God bless.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street.
Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand.